That is the opening music from the Eighth Symphony of Antonín Dvořák in a performance by the Czech Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by Václav Neumann. And it will be played in its entirety by the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra Friday night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts under the direction of the orchestra's music director and professor of conducting at the University of Illinois, Donald Schleicher, who will be joining us in a matter of moments here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Kelly. The show is your connection to local performances. Also coming up on the program in the second half of the show, I'll be talking with composer Peter Michailov, who is giving a recital of his works, or presenting a recital of his works, also Friday night at 7:30 in Champaign at Indigo Artist Co-op, which is in on University Avenue, right in the heart of downtown Champaign. And we also have a live performance of a part of his viola sonata will be happening in our studio in that latter half of the show. But first, Don Schleicher has been with the University of Illinois School of Music how long now?
I believe, Kevin, that it's 17 years.
17 years. I wouldn't...
That's give or take.
Almost as long as I've been around here, and I didn't realize it had been quite that long. Well, I suppose that could be. And your background includes a lot of work with different types of orchestras, including young orchestras, but also work as a high school band director and previously at the University of Michigan. And I wonder, before we actually get into the discussion of the concert in particular, how your experiences with both professional orchestras and with school orchestras and with bands, for that matter, has led to how you have decided to develop the orchestral program here at the University of Illinois.
It's certainly a good question. I think being a public school teacher, high school teacher, gave me the opportunity to practice a lot. It's one of the great advantages of being a high school band teacher or orchestra teacher, whatever it is you conduct every day for hours and hours and hours. So you've got plenty of chances to make mistakes and pick yourself back up and do better. And if you do a little better, then the kids do a little better. And if the kids do a little better, then you do a little better, and et cetera, et cetera. Some growth happens. So it's a great kind of lab to develop. I must say, though, that I learned that the repertoire was not exactly what I was interested in terms of my own personal growth. So that led one thing to another to aspire to the kind of repertoire such as Dvorak that I wanted to do someday. And in that case, I knew I had to get out and over, and I wouldn't say up necessarily, but certainly over. So I suspect there aren't a whole lot of folks, conducting colleagues that I have in the business, that can say that they've conducted professional orchestras and operas and an elementary band as a profession. There's probably not many, I would think, in the planet that have done that. And I think it adds a little bit of reality to my scope of experiences.
Dealing with students at the university, of course, at least a quarter of them are virtually high school students in that they've just come from high school. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, for the next 3 years and then however many graduate students you may have in the program, they become more developed both as individual performers on their instruments and then as overall musicians and orchestral performers. And I wonder how you decide to choose some of the music that you do. I know that you want to give them as well-rounded an approach as you can, but you only have so many concerts a year, and you only get them for 4 years or maybe less. And so I assume that there has to be a lot of thinking that goes on in deciding, do I play Dvorak? Do I play Mozart? What do I play with them this year?
Yeah, it's quite a puzzle to put together. I try to just make sure that the diet of their experiences trump everything else. I hate to say that I don't care about the audience, but I really don't. I care more about the students and the experience that they're getting. So they get a little bit of old, they get a little bit of new. I see my job as like a curator of a museum. I really need to give them a bit of everything so that when they leave, they've got a check mark next to standard repertoire, check mark next to new music, check mark next to a little bit of all.
Including some not-so-standard repertoire, things that, you know, are not necessarily new but are a little bit off the beaten path.
From time to time. But look, one of the things that the advantages that we have in academia is that we have rehearsal time. So we do something like this Dvorak G Major Symphony. If any of our students are fortunate enough to someday get to play this piece in a real orchestra, in a professional orchestra in Indianapolis or St. Louis or the like, they don't have rehearsal time. They're going to play that piece. They're going to play it down once or twice and then be done with it and then perform it. And in our situation, we can really decompose it. We can rip it apart. We can get to know it. We can live with it. We can breathe it intensely. So I always tell the students, this is the time right now to really invest in this piece and get it under your fingers, because next time you play it, you won't have this kind of time, a luxury, if you will.
And the really professional world is usually like 2, 3, 4 rehearsals.
Yeah. I would say standard would be 4 rehearsals, but on the Dvorak 8, such a standard piece, maybe 1. Yeah, because they're going to do something else on the program that won't be quite as standard. This is the opportunity for them to really understand the insides of it.
So when you do something like Dvorak, which is pretty standard and it's right in the meat of the romantic repertoire, I assume also that there are things that you can teach them in the course of teaching Dvorak that they can apply to lots of other kinds of music. Do you address that sort of thing directly with them?
Yes, I try to the best I can. I try to make, for example, this a particular symphony is not at all like some of the other symphonic works that they do, in his more nostalgic period when he wrote the American Quartet, for example, and some of the chamber music that he wrote when he was in America. It's not at all like that. So, but oftentimes what we do does correlate to their solo repertoire or their chamber repertoire, and I try to do the best I can to assimilate the same.
I'm thinking also stylistically from piece to piece. The piece with which you're going to open Friday's concert is, of course, for a different piece of music, completely different genre that has all kinds of difficulties that show up if you're actually a musician that may be not so obvious if you're just listening to Mozart. And that's his Magic Flute Overture. How do you go about differentiating style, assuming that you do take, you know, you, with this orchestra, you say, this is how we're going to play Mozart, which is different from how we're going to play Dvorak.
Yes, well, in the case of Mozart, of course, it's, as you said, on the one hand, very difficult. On the other hand, quite easy if one approaches Mozart as if it is always opera. So the instrumental music is always opera. So every dynamic has a character associated with it, not just the dynamic. Every articulation, every cadence, it's all, as in fact, Mr. Bernstein was the one who said all Mozart is opera. So so this is what I tried to teach them as we're playing this piece, that when they play Mozart, the Mozart clarinet concerto, or if they play the Mozart, a quartet or any piece of chamber music, that they should find out what tonality it is, because the tonality directly affects the character of the music, whether it's an E-flat major or C major or what have you. So it is hopefully they will become better Mozart players after this tiny Mozart experience over the last couple of weeks.
I picked a particular recording that I like of the piece. Of course, I haven't heard your performance, so I don't know how you treat it. For conductors, anyway, the opening is sort of famously challenging.
Impossible. It's impossible.
Well, I'm sure you'll prove it not to be impossible. But how, for example, in these famous opening chords, would you address with the orchestra, this is opera, therefore you play it how?
Well, I think dramatically, but still with a great, beautiful sound that Baroque players would play. But the opening chords, fortissimo, to me is like the hammer of the mason in the opera. And therefore, it should have that kind of dramatic intent. So it starts the opera as if to say, ladies and gentlemen, Come across the street. The opera's about ready to begin. Get out of your lunch. Get out of your dinner. Come on over. Sit down. Here we go.
And then the three chords come up again. That's the first half or so of the overture to the opera The Magic Flute by Mozart, and a performance here by the Scottish Chamber Orchestra conducted by Sir Charles McCarris. It'll be played by the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra conducted by Donald Schleicher Friday night at 7:30 at their concert at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. And you're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9, where we have support today provided by the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum and its February 7th presentation of U.S. Poet Laureate Natasha Trethewey. This Pulitzer Prize-winning writer will deliver a public reading and attend a private dinner at the Presidential Museum. Tickets and information are online at presidentlincoln.org. This is WILL. And I assume, Don, when you, in addition to describing how the music is operatic, you tell them the story. Or at least indicate something of how the music.
Oh, the students in the orchestra.
Yeah.
Yes, of course. We talk about the story a little bit. There's a slight assumption that many of them know or have studied it.
Slight assumption.
Yes.
How much are, it sort of raises the question, how much are you able to assume that high school, college performance majors, which most of them are who are in your orchestra, do know about this sort of thing?
Yeah, well, you know, I sort of approach it like there's a couple of basic things with any piece that I would like them all to make sure they know. So even if they're the least accomplished, experienced, that they all need to know for sure, but point the others in a direction to get more information. It's quite often I give them handouts. So I don't waste the rehearsal time, not waste, but I don't take rehearsal time in sort of boring lectures since I'm not exactly a speaker. So I oftentimes will give them a handout. Nowadays, of course, we send it to them online saying, here, go read here, go and cite various possibilities for them for further growth.
And hope that they actually go do it.
And hope that they go do it. I think most do.
On this concert on Friday night, there is also a piece for solo performer with orchestra, a piece called Tableau de Provence, which is essentially a saxophone concerto or a saxophone solo by Paul Maurice, who is a composer I hadn't happened to have heard of. And it'll be played by, do you go by Phil or Philip?
Phil, usually.
Pyrick.
Phil Pyrick.
And you got this honor by winning a competition?
The annual University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra's concerto competition, yeah.
And, Don, are you involved in the judging for that?
No, I stay as far away from that as with the plague. We hire outside judges to judge the competition, and then the winners are forwarded to the orchestra for performance in the following academic year. This year, three winners. And then we spread them out throughout the season so that they can fit nicely into a normal sort of concert setting.
And are they pulled from, say, a group of instruments, woodwind, brass, and strings?
Yes, what happens is that each little area, instrumental area and vocal area within the school have separate competitions on their own, and then they submit it to a final round, what amounts to, I believe, 13 or 15 finalists, and those people all play for 15 minutes each, and outside judges come in and pick the top three of those 15. So it's quite significant, and for Philip to win on the saxophone is quite impressive.
Impressive because?
Because the competition is a lot. You've got to go, he's got to go against the pianists and the singers and the flutists and the clarinetists and all of the above.
Of course, the University of Illinois has historically a very strong saxophone studio, but then there's a lot of other strong studios here. the piece that you chose, chosen by you, chosen not by your professor, Deborah Rickmeyer, in collaboration?
It was chosen by me. I had competed in the competition in years past, and I wanted to choose a piece that was still meaningful to me and a piece that I really enjoyed playing, but also something that I sort of knew would have broad appeal to an audience right off the bat. Something that, you know, I hoped I could be successful with in the competition, but also in a performance setting with the orchestra, potentially.
So how many times before did you try out?
I believe this was the third time.
And what year are you?
Well, I am a first-year doctoral student now, but I was a second-year master's student last year when I won the competition.
So you got some hard knocks on the way, so to speak. or you may have played marvelously well, and somebody else just happened to win.
You know, and that's having done many, many, many competitions at this point in my life, that's sort of how it goes. You win some, you lose some, and when you win some, you know, it's great and feels great. And when you lose some, you pick back up and start the next day and get ready for whatever the next big thing is.
Keep practicing.
Yeah, of course.
For saxophonists, I imagine that the professional career as either a soloist or certainly as an orchestral player, options are limited. Or am I wrong about that?
No, I suppose that wouldn't be a wrong. That wouldn't be an incorrect statement. There aren't a lot of. I would argue that there aren't a lot of solo touring classical musicians at this point in where we are at all anymore. But in terms of a solo career as a classical saxophonist, there aren't a whole lot of people who engage in that. Most are. Also have a teaching position or are also engaged in some other aspect of the music business.
Lots of saxophonists are jazz musicians also.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Has that figured in your background at all?
It did, mostly earlier in my career, however, or my studies and my life. The last several years I've focused a lot more on just classical music and also on contemporary music. I've been working with a lot of composers in the past several years, getting new works written for me and for to perform in different contexts.
Since you've played jazz, do you ever feel that experience informs how you play classical stuff?
Yeah, I mean, there's the two are, jazz and classical music are obviously quite different, but there's lots of unifying elements, and I think there's something to be gained from the experience of playing jazz, and in that it can sort of open you up a little bit more and make one more aware and really listen a lot more than some classical musicians might otherwise do.
I know I've had a few conversations with jazz musicians, mm-hmm, in the last number of months who have commented that at least today's jazz musician often has classical background. Mm. And so they have those kind of chops. And so here I guess it's working the other way around. The saxophone literature has an awful lot of French pieces. and you're doing one of those.
That is true.
Why is that? I've never actually thought of that before. And is it just that France is full of saxophonists, or?
Well, one might say that actually. the saxophone was actually invented in France. I don't know if you or any of the listeners knew that, but it's so, you know, from its inception, it was sort of a French instrument, invented in the 1840s, maybe 1839, depending on what source you look at, and the first sort of major musical institution where the saxophone was taught was the Paris Conservatoire by the inventor for a couple of years in the 19th century. But then right amidst the end of World War II, great virtuoso Marcel Mule began teaching as a second saxophone professor at the Paris Conservatoire. And he is really responsible for sort of the resurgence of a French repertoire and sort of creating a large body of works that that are, you know, form that French repertoire that you're talking about.
And a lot of them tend to be a great deal of fun, as it sounds like this piece is.
Sure,
at least,
yeah.
I mean, I haven't heard it before except a little bit of the last mm-hmm. movement, which we're going to hear.
Yeah, it's this piece actually wasn't written for Marcel Mule, but was written for one of his great students, Jean-Marie Landex, another French saxophonist, and was, yeah, it's a lot of fun to play. I think it's a lot of fun to listen to. I hope it's a lot of fun for the orchestra. It seems like it was when we've had our rehearsals. So,
is it, Don, is it difficult for the orchestra to play?
Not particularly. It's enjoyable. It lays well. So it's not, it doesn't have seven flats like the Ibert has.
Ibert concertino.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
And jazz rhythm. So it's not so awkward.
It's more idiomatically written for the orchestra, yeah, I would say.
I think it's written very well.
And the piece is Tableau de Provence. There's five movements, the last of which, you said, is the name of an insect?
Yeah, the title, Le Cabredon, is the name of an insect that's native to France. A lot of people sometimes say that they simplify it to say it's the bumblebee, sort of likening the piece to a rather well-known work, The Flight of the Bumblebee, to which the movement shares a couple of some similarities that you might hear. But yeah, it's just a native buzzing insect to the south of France,
as
Provence.
In the process of learning the piece, did you have to become familiar with the insect?
You know, I haven't spent a whole lot of time in the south of France. I've spent a little, but I'm not really familiar with the insect. So no, all of my familiarity with the insect is hypothetical.
So we can't exactly say that the bug itself informs your performance.
I guess not.
Well, we could ask that question of the performer here, who I just lost his name. Who's playing here?
Claude DeLong, who is the current professor of saxophone at the Paris Conservatoire.
This is the final movement from the Tableau de Provence of Paul Maurice, which Phil Pyrick will play with the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra Friday night on a concert that starts at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. That's the final movement from the Tableau de Provence of Paul Maurice, in a performance by Claude DeLong on saxophone with the Singapore Symphony Orchestra led by Lan Shui here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. The entire piece will be played by Phil Pyrick, who is one of the winners of the concerto competitions last year at the University of Illinois. And he'll be performing with the University Symphony Friday night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center. And he's joined us on the show today along with Professor Don Schleicher, who is, of course, the conductor of the orchestra and will lead that entire performance. And I appreciate that both of you taking some time to come in and join us on the show and let us know about the orchestra.
Thanks very much for having us.
Thanks so much.
It's a fabulous orchestra, and anybody who doesn't know about it, you know, you said earlier, Don, that, you know, when these students get out and they can play in real orchestras, this orchestra is better than a whole lot of professional orchestras across the country, and you're to be credited with that.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Completely. They're going to be playing, among other things, Mozart and the sax piece, the Dvorak Eighth Symphony. Here is the third movement on Live and Local. Music by Antonín Dvořák. That was some of the third movement of his Eighth Symphony with the Czech Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by Václav Neumann. And that'll be played by the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra Friday night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. In fact, our program is made possible today by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, welcoming the East Coast Chamber Orchestra on Thursday, February 7th at 7:30 p.m. in the Follinger Grade Hall. This youthful, self-conducted ensemble will present a program of Purcell, Britten, Bartok, and Geminiani. For more information, visit krannertcenter.com. Also Friday night, a recital of newer music by Peter Michailov will be presented at the Indigo Artist Co-op, which is in the heart of downtown Champaign, specifically at 9 East University Avenue. It's a small gallery, and they do have some exhibitions going on there as well. I might make mention of those coming up. Peter is somebody I've known actually for a few years. Used to be on the board of the Prairie Ensemble, which is an orchestra that I'm involved with, and I knew that he was a composer, and I hadn't really known, Peter, that you had abandoned composition almost entirely for, what, 40 years, something like that?
Let's say 35.
Actually do the math.
But I composed sporadically during that period, but mostly I worked at the U of I doing administrative work, and that took up most of my time.
But having gotten 3 degrees in music, including composition both at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and then University of Michigan, and then here at the University of Illinois for your doctorate in the 70s, that was a pretty serious commitment to music and composition. It must have been required some thought to decide, I guess I'm not going to do that. Or did you actually decide actively, I'm not going to do that? Or did something happen that said, well, it looks like this isn't working out?
It was sort of a combination of both. I retired in 2006. Also in 2006, Roger Hannay, who was my undergraduate composition teacher, died. So in 2007, I wrote a string quartet in his memory, which is going to be played on this concert. And so that piece really is what got me back into composition, although I really didn't get to the point that I thought of myself as a full-time composer till maybe 2009. But that's what I'm doing full-time now.
And what prohibits one these days, if you can even talk about these days, or maybe in those days, from becoming a composer? I mean, I would think it would be a pretty daunting task to anybody who's studying that to decide to make it a full-time thing outside of, say, university teaching.
Yeah. Part of the issue was because I wasn't in music, I wrote things occasionally, but I didn't really have the chance to have performances of them. I know of one performer who said to me one time, oh, why didn't you just write music and stick it in the drawer? And I said to him, well, look, you're a performer. Would you be happy playing in a practice room all day? He got the point.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I noticed in reading a small biographical sketch about you that I'm guessing that you wrote this sketch. I don't know. You didn't give it to me, and I didn't show it to you. So I'm just going to quote from it, and you can tell me if it's accurate or not. It says here, quote, his music draws on varied strands of the Western tradition, combining often familiar rhythmic and melodic gestures in unfamiliar contexts and combinations, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Does that come from you?
Yes.
What does that mean exactly?
Perhaps you can hear it when you hear Lydia and Cara play some of the viola sonata, which we're going to begin with. I've known Lydia for about 2 years.
Is this Lydia Tang?
Uh-huh. Lydia Tang. And for practically all that time, she's been after me to put on a composition recital. And the beginning of the fall, she called me, and her fiancé, Jeff, called, And they basically made me an offer I couldn't refuse. And I felt at that time that I was ready in a way that I hadn't felt before, both in terms of having a portfolio of works and in terms of knowing performers that I could call on to play the stuff and sing it. Because there is vocal music, of course, as well on the concert.
What was the offer you couldn't refuse? Well, maybe I should ask Lydia, what was the offer he couldn't refuse? That you would just play a piece of his?
Oh, hi, everybody. I just thought it would be really wonderful if I noticed from playing a couple of his pieces that each one, it drew upon the same musical language, but each one was also so different. And so I thought it would be really wonderful to have a concert that showcases a lot of his music.
And how did you get exposed to his music in the first place?
Peter wrote a piece, his viola sonata, for me for my master's recital in 2011. And since then, we've had a wonderful working relationship.
But before he did that, I mean, you must have known something about him, or did you go to him and say, will you write me something? Or did he know that you played viola and said, I want to write something?
Yeah. He knew that I was the viola teaching assistant at the time, and so he approached me with the viola sonata, and I was just so happy to play it.
Sure.
Actually, I didn't know that. We ended up sitting together fortuitously at a concert, and we started talking as total strangers. And Lydia said, I'm a violist, and I'm giving a recital at the end of April. You should come. And I said, well, I'm a composer, and I'll write something for your recital. You should play it. And we've just had a great relationship ever since.
Well, that's a good way to start, isn't it? We're going to hear, I think, a couple of movements from the sonata, the sonata for viola and piano, which will open the concert of music by Peter A. Michailov. It's called Celebration, the Music of Peter, Friday night at 7:30 at Inigo Artists Co-op. Kara Chowning is with us on piano. She's going to be playing on most of the recital, or at least a good deal of the recital, and Lydia on it looks like three different pieces here, and we'll talk about the rest of the program later. Which movements are we hearing?
We'll be playing the first two movements.
Okay. Lydia Tang with Kara Chowning, music by Peter Michailov, live on Live and Local. Thank you. The first two movements of the Sonata for Viola and Piano by Peter Michailov, with violist Lydia Tang and pianist Kara Chowning, played live here in our studio on Live and Local on FM 90.9. The complete sonata will open a celebration of Peter's music Friday night at 7:30 at Indigo Artist Co-op in downtown Champaign. That sounds like it was a challenge to prepare, probably conceptually and technically, I'm guessing, for both of you.
There are some spots.
Yeah.
And I'm looking over the whole program here. There's quite a number of pieces on here. And several of them have titles that beg all kinds of questions, you know, with stories and whatnot. The second one on the program, Oasis, Five Bagatelles for Piano, which William Hylas will play. The Ballad of the Hanged Man is a piece for mezzo-soprano and piano, which Kara will be playing along with Bethany Stiles. And then four songs of William Butler Yeats, which baritone Ron Headland will sing with cellist Barbara Headland and Kara at the piano. And then a sort of normal title, Aria and Toccata, for Lydia again, viola and cello with Samuel Araya. And then Variations, Roger Hannay in Memoriam, which Peter mentioned, has fairly self-explanatory in its title. And then finally, Labyrinth for Woodwind Quintet. It's another one that suggests that much of your music, at least on this program, seems to have some sort of inspiration behind it, perhaps extra musical.
Well, let me talk a little about the bagatelles, which have the title Oasis. I've just finished several months of chemotherapy, and one of the results of the chemotherapy was I just didn't have the stamina for any sustained effort, physical or mental, which meant that I couldn't compose, and that bothered me a lot. And I finally figured out that in the few days before each treatment, when I was at my strongest, I could turn out a couple of bagatelles, which by definition are not too ambitious pieces.
Usually quite short.
Yeah, yeah. And so I asked Bill Hylas if he would be interested in performing these, and he said yes, he would try to do them next season. What happened was, my plan was to call it Five Bagatelles for Piano. And really at the last minute, as I was cleaning things up, it occurred to me that in the midst of chemotherapy, this piece, working on these bagatelles, really was an oasis for me. And then when Bill heard about this concert, he called me and he said, you know, I can have them ready in time for that if you can get me on the program. So
there
things just fell into place very well.
And I wish we had time to address the other pieces, because the Ballad of the Hanged Man has quite a text. Where did you get it, by the way, without saying anything
it's
about
from
it?
A poem by François Villon, who was a 15th century French poet, one of my favorite poets, and this is one of my favorite of his works.
A bit on the dark side.
It is, indeed, yes.
People will have to go hear it, although it'll be sung in French, but you have the translation in the program so they can see what it's all about. And I'm guessing that some of the songs of William Butler Yeats have some humor to them.
Yes, yeah.
With titles like A Drinking Song and especially A Drunken Man's Praise of Sobriety.
Yes.
And Ron Headland is very good at humor, so I'm sure he delivers them rather well.
Yes.
This recital of Peter Michailov's music is Friday night at 7:30 at Indigo Artist Co-op and involves the two performers who've been live with us today and quite a number of others. Is there a charge for the program?
No, it's free, open to the public.
And Indigo Artist Co-op is at 9 East University Avenue in downtown Champaign. It's I think where the Furniture Lounge used to be, and is now a couple of doors away, if I'm remembering right. There is an exhibition going on right now. It's called Fleeting. Actually, I left off the page that had some information about that. But you can certainly go to their website. Just look for Indigo, spelled just how it sounds, Artist Co-op. And they've got lots of things that go on, lots of music often. Mm-hmm. And congratulations on pulling this together, and best of luck with your chemo and everything that goes after it.
Thank you.
And thanks to Lydia and Kara for preparing the music and coming on the show.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Some other events that are going on in our listening area that you can see and hear live over the next couple of days. Louder and Manning are doing an acoustic show at the No Name Bar in Springfield coming up pretty shortly. Starts at 5:30 this evening. Jam and Jimmy Bean and Friends have their weekly acoustic experience at Bentley's Pub in downtown Champaign. That starts at 6. It's the weekly traditional Irish music session, also downtown Champaign, tonight at 8:30 at Dublin O'Neill's. And Christian McBride and Inside Straight are at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts tomorrow evening at 7:30. Millikan University Opera Theater is presenting a series of both sacred and secular cantatas by Johann Sebastian Bach. That runs Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The Thursday, Friday, Saturday performances at 7:30. Sunday afternoon's performance at 2 o'clock. All of those in the Albert Taylor Theater on the Millikan campus in Decatur. And the Jill Andrews singer-songwriter will be at Cowboy Monkey in Champaign tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. The UI No. 4 Jazz Band will be at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock, and the Almost A Quartet be doing the Uncorked program at the Krannert Center in Urbana tomorrow evening at 5 o'clock. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. On tomorrow's program, I'll be talking with pianist Jade Simmons, who is actually a former Miss Illinois and runner-up for Miss America. She's going to be playing with the... I got to get my orchestra straight. She's going to be playing... with, not the Illinois Symphony, with the Peoria Symphony Orchestra. Lydia's going to be playing in that concert. Peoria Symphony Orchestra on Saturday night. Jade, a fascinating person, will be talking with her on tomorrow's program. Hope you'll tune in for that, 4 o'clock. Our program today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past. Through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois, more information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309. You're listening to 90.9 WYLL-FM and HD Urbana, with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR, classical music, and more for Central Illinois. We're a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Stay tuned for All Things Considered, coming up in about 30 seconds from NPR.